Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go. They screwed it up already. This is crazy.
This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Basically, the 1% of the motorcycle community who operates outside the law.
Their total focus is on hatred for the enemy. They have a policy of shoot or kill on sight if they can.
It's bullshit. Law enforcement just tries to paint this picture to the media. Just cover up their bullshit, cover up their lies, and I just like to say fuck them. That's straight from Mike P. Jump on your bike, let's hit the road. Come on.
Hey. Fuck them.
Oh. Well, that's right. I'll say that.
All right, ladies.
There's going
three
on.
Of you now. There's three of you now.
Okay. All right.
Stacy, say hello to Gina.
Hey, Gina. What's going
on? Oh, not much. Not much. Just had a nice ride in from work, you know.
That's cool.
It was actually, I was going over the bridge where the 805 dumps into the 5. And as I look down, I see this chick on a bike. I knew who it was right away. I go rolling up next to her at about 85 miles an hour. All I got was a long red fingernail with a middle finger.
It's what you so deserve.
Yes, my sister. You know?
You're so loved, Phil.
Yeah, you know. But it's okay. You know, hang in there.
Hey. At least she did it with class, and she was being sexy. The fingernail was red and long, so, you know,
yeah.
It all worked.
Just driving with just a basic shirt on, too. You know,
mm-hmm. There you go.
That's like one time I walked into Bill's, and this guy was bitching about some chick that would blew his doors off on a motorcycle with long red fingernails.
Yeah,
she
rides
well.
Got to make a statement, right?
Exactly.
And then a couple days later, she smoked his ass again at a red light.
Man needed character building.
Oh, that's great.
Little
I'm like putting them in their place.
Nothing worse than having a patch member have to explain that one.
Yeah, I'm sure we went back to all the legacy vets and told them exactly what happened. But I talked to Carl. He's going to be calling in about 7-8 minutes.
Okay.
So everybody's got their questions.
Yep, I got everything.
I feel like I'm in class. You're killing me.
I know. We're doing homework.
The dog ate my homework. Excuse.
I thought to myself, oh, tonight's going to be a nice, relaxing evening. I'll listen to the radio. And all of a sudden, I'm told, line up them questions. I'm like, oh, God, okay.
Did you get a phone call, too?
No, I had one of them.
I started mine last week.
I had
one
of them little.
I mean, Bill's hard to follow, you know, because he does questions together, and so we got to try.
You're
going to
be just fine.
Yep.
You know, it's like
been around them both long enough to know exactly what to do.
Yep, that's it, exactly.
It's so
got
cold.
Got a lot of reverb in the background.
What?
I don't have a background. I mean, I have my front door open, but there's nothing on. No TV, no nothing.
And I'm sitting still, so. But it's so cold here tonight, I had to put my stadium coat on to go outside.
And how cold is it by you? Because it's like 62 here, which is fine. I'm in shorts.
It's in the 40s.
It's 71 and sunny right now.
You know, we don't even want to hear your crap. It didn't even hit 70 degrees here today.
You know, actually...
I was in shorts.
Actually,
it's in the dark out over here, completely dark.
Yeah. Well, you know, I had heard something recently where, actually it came from a guy. I thought I was the only one that does that. But, you know, about doing a ride and being able to smell stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Today it was really sweet going to work this morning, riding past the ocean, and you could just smell the salt water.
Nice. Yeah, I live right on, like, the eastern ocean front over here in Rhode Island, and it's like I drive every 10 minutes and I smack into the ocean. I'm like completely surrounded by it.
Very cool.
Yeah, I couldn't say I know that smell. I don't. We have a stinky Lake Michigan here, so I don't know.
Let me tell you something. Low tide is not the most pleasant experience.
I probably mentioned this before, but I'll say it again, is the best. There's one time of the year that is just perfect on my travels to and from work. When the strawberries are at that fresh, ripe taste, you can smell it, and you got the ocean coming in on the other side. They meet together.
Nice.
I'm surprised I haven't crashed because the smell is so great.
Do they have, like, a strawberry fest by you, like, during certain parts of the season?
No, I haven't heard anything about that. I know we have an avocado festival.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Because Fallbrook, which isn't too far out from Oceanside Way, they're known for their avocados and stuff. But, no, I haven't seen a strawberry.
I didn't know, because I know Florida has a strawberry fest, and their strawberries are so sweet. It's crazy, but they're good. And I didn't know if California had that as well, because since you're able to have crops pretty much all year long.
The strawberry patch goes from about the end of January through about August.
Okay.
So Carl will be calling in here in a couple minutes.
Okay.
So let's say we got a guy in the chat room by the name of Javier Marquez.
Hi, Javier.
There you go.
Okay. So before Carl comes on, anybody else find that this season's beginning is like out there?
It's Javier.
It is.
In some cases, you actually have to think.
Yeah, it's not like the previous seasons where it just blended right in. Went from one season end, and it blended right into the following season. This is completely out there and unexpected, you know, but it's okay. It's keeping us on our toes. Got to pay attention.
Exactly. I mean, that's what's so cool about it. It's... You know, I mean, I actually watched it twice just because of questions that came up.
Right. Go ahead.
I think we have Carl on the line right now. Is that you, Carl?
Yes.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Not bad. You got, right now, my partner that usually does this with me, his wife is, he's going to have a couple operations tomorrow. So... I've got three ladies here that are with you, and they have questions. So I'll let one of them go first.
Nora, you can ask the question first.
Okay. Hi, Carl. It's Nora. Oh. Hi, Carl. It's Nora from Chicago. How are you?
Carl?
Is he there?
Is he there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Okay, one Chicago to another Chicago. Oh, three Chicago.
Yeah. We're going to Chicago.
Take it after all kind in poker. Gosh.
What's going on, Carlos? No. Laura's in Chicago. She's got some questions for you. I'm basically originally born and raised in Chicago, but I'm a California mainstay for the last almost 30 years.
30
when
years.
When I found out I could ride my motorcycle all year long, I decided to stay and then start my family and stuff.
I know that's
but
right,
I'll let Laura,
man. The weather out here is fantastic.
Absolutely.
All right.
We just heard from Stacy, who's in Massachusetts on the border there. It's, I guess,
Rhode Island, Massachusetts. Yep, right on the state line.
Mm. I guess it's degrees there. Nora says it's 62, but right now by me the thermometer says 71 and sunny. So they're a little
jealous.
Oh yeah,
it's nice and sunny. Huh?
They're a little
jealous.
But go ahead, Nora. You start with your questions.
Okay. Before we go into like your the season that you were in with Sons of Anarchy, is all right if we go into a little bit of your past before we go into Sons of Anarchy?
Yeah, whatever you want.
Okay. So as growing up as a Chicago native, did you find anything like a base in Chicago here where it prompted you to go into acting?
No, actually, I never acted in Chicago. I left Chicago right after high school, so I went away to college, and I found acting in college. So yeah, I never did any theater or acting in Chicago as a kid.
Okay. Now, as your football career, did you start that in Chicago, and that brought you out?
Yeah, I started that in Chicago. I started that in high school. I played football for Harper High School in Chicago on 65th and Woods. And,
right.
Yeah, and that took me to college. And in college, I found acting.
Okay. Now, you were also, while playing football, you were also helping out children in the community with an organization of People of the World of End to End Racism. Now, how did that work? How did that work with the children, or how did you go about basing this group with them?
The group was called It was People of the World in Racism, and it was through this mentor of mine called Step. Miss Abel, and Miss Abel would take us to like surrounding areas in Illinois, and we would go and play with kids that wouldn't normally play with black people. So like she would find a rainbow coalition from the football team, if you will, and we would go to these gyms and we'd play basketball with these kids and we'd play football and we would just have fun with these kids and let them know that you can have fun with people outside of your race. And And we started, like, with young kids because it starts at home and it starts with the younger generations. And if you get to them early enough, you can make them not racist, I guess. And that's what she
right.
was doing.
Well, you know, the thing about that is sometimes it's instilled by parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes
yeah.
it is and sometimes it's not. Like you were saying, it depends on neighborhoods of that nature. Now, where I was born and raised, it was predominant white. And so once I hit high school, and then it was about 95% black, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But as a child, you know, being in Catholic school, when we had our first black mailman, you know, the whole entire neighborhood went crazy. They would call my mom,
wow.
Oh, my God, your daughter's walking around with the mailman. What's the matter with her? You know, and my mother would, because I would sit there since he was new on the route, oh, this is so-and-so's house, you know what I mean, helping
uh-huh.
him out. And, you know, the phone call she got, it was just crazy, you know, what is wrong with your daughter? And she's like, there's nothing wrong with her. She doesn't see the color as you do. you know,
mm-hmm.
People that are a certain way to her. That's how she connects with people, you know, and
yeah.
I've always been like that. So I never had, you know, that race card, so to say. But unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
there's people that do. Nothing you can do about it. You know, it's
no.
the of the people. It's not, you know, everybody. Okay, the next thing. Now, how did your mom feel in regards to, or your family? How did they feel when it came to when you started taking acting in college and where that was going with you?
My mother, she supports pretty much anything I do. So, like, I could be a serial killer and she'd be not my number one fan. So whenever, like, I played football and she would always come out to watch my games and stuff like that. When I got into acting, she was the first one. She was on the first thing smoking to come see me do a play or any of that. So, like, if I'm on TV or something like that, she will, like, have all her friends over to her house and they would watch it. And she loves it. She loves every minute of it.
That's excellent, you know, that you have that family support, you know, because sometimes people don't have that. Now, when you first came out to California, now, were you going out to California in regards to you were directed to where you wanted to maybe do comedy and then go into acting or because you were, you know, doing comedy as well?
I was. When I first got out here, when I came out here, I just came out because I wanted a change of pace. Like, I was on my way to graduate college and be a teacher. So I was an elementary education major, and I had one semester to graduation. I figured if I graduated, I'd go off and be a teacher, and my life would be over, and that would be it for me. So I said I'll give myself a year or two to come out to L.A. and pursue some things, whatever they were. Comedy, acting, whatever, and, you know, just take a break. And
okay.
After 2 years, if nothing happened, then I'll go back, finish my degree, and be a teacher. And I got out here, and things just started happening, and I'm still here.
So. Hey, Carl, this is Philip. I got a question. Okay, so when you were a kid in school, and the teacher sent you home with a note to give to your mother
mm-hmm.
about things you did in class, because I had the same thing happen to me, only my cousin, actually my mom's youngest sister, my aunt, she's like a year older than me, who,
mm-hmm.
they wouldn't give me the note. They would give it to her to give to my mom. For my dad to get home, because my mom wouldn't do anything until my dad got there. So, yeah, I used to get my ass, you know, I got disciplined the old school way. But
yeah.
So when you were in college, you were going to take up teaching. Who was the teacher that put that thought in your head to do that?
I had this teacher in fifth grade, called Miss Willis. And I was just like the class clown, and I would just, you know, try to make people laugh. And I rarely paid attention to studies and stuff like that. And this teacher, I don't know what she saw in me or what she saw, but she would never, like, let me just get off. She wouldn't send me home. She wouldn't suspend me. She wouldn't do anything. She would, like, make me stay behind and write stuff, and she would make me, like, read extra, and she would say, you college material, and I'm not going to let you just be a statistic and things like that. And I didn't even know what college was at this point. I didn't care about college. I just wanted to make my friends laugh and be really goofy. And this lady she wasn't having it. Her name was Miss Willis. She was not having it. And she's the reason why I started taking studies seriously, why I went to college, and partially while I'm out here.
Nice. Hold on 1 second. I opted to, I had a cousin who was a Marine, and I got in a little bit of trouble. And back then, you know, if you remember, you could go, you got one chance. The judge gave you one chance to turn your life around.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
yes.
Well, I don't know if he's my age or not. Somebody asked me, how do you know he's your age? But what I'm saying is, back in that day, I got a chance to turn shit around, and I did. And it was all for the better. And I remember the name of the judge who gave me the second chance, and his name was Joseph Gill. He died a few years ago, but he was a good guy. And after I got out of boot camp, I went back and I thanked him. But
It's good if you can go back and thank those people. Like, I don't even know where Miss Willis is. I don't know how I can go back and thank her. Like, if I could, I'd do something really great for her. But I don't even know where she is. And in this day and age of internet, you think you'd be able to find her. But I'm pretty sure she's not on Facebook or any of that kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good that you got to thank him before he died and tell him that he changed your life. Because people change their lives.
Oh, yeah, he saw when I walked in. Jaw just dropped because I'm only 5'8", but I was 6'6", and I didn't take shit from anybody.
Yeah, I understand that. And I'm 36,
ahead,
by the way. So there you go.
Stacey,
Hi, Carl. This is Stacey in Rhode Island. Yeah, Rhode Island, the biggest little state in the union. We're just full of oceans and a lot of good seafood. But question. I want to know when the epiphany happened during your theater production of Mice and Men that you felt the need to keep pursuing the acting.
I don't know. I guess it was the way it all came about. Like, I was playing football, and my coaches would give us these. It was my freshman year, and my coaches would give us these classes that we couldn't fail, so we would be able to play next year. So he gave me a class called, like, coaching football and coaching baseball, and he gave me one theater practicum. And this is where you go and build sets and break down sets when the plays start and finish. And so all my teammates told me, you never have to go to this class. And by never, they meant you don't have to go all the time because the coach and the teacher had an agreement. But I took it as literally never, and I never went to this class. And so the teacher calls me and says, you never come to my class. I have to flunk you. The only way you can pass is if you do this, be Crooks and of Mice and Men. And I guess he just didn't have anybody to play the role. And I was so scared, and I was like, I'd never acted before. I don't want to do this. And I went to my coach, and I was like, can you tell him to not make me do this, and I'll go to class next time. And my coach thought it would be funny for me to do this play, so they made me do the play. They brought the whole team, and when I did the play, and it was the whole thing, the production, like rehearsals and all that kind of stuff. You bond with all these people, and then you perform it in front of everybody, and then you get to see the gratification afterwards. It was a rush that I got, and I never wanted to let that go.
Now, you had other parts in different productions. You were in A Christmas Carol, and you were The Lion and the Wiz. How was that? How did that go? That was fun.
It's pretty much, The Wiz is the black version of The Wizard of Oz with Diana Ross and Michael Jackson.
Right. I'm 45, so I was a kid when that came out, the original.
Yeah, so we did that one. And it was, I was the lion, and it was fun. It was fun to be, like, you know, all big and loud and tough and act tough. And then when somebody comes up against you, you got to cower down and show them who you really are. So that was fun to do. And those two totally different roles. Crooks was like a strong dude, and he stood up for himself. And the lion was a coward that faked like he was really big and tough. So it was really fun to do those two roles and that was my first two acting jobs, you know? So that was fun. You remember those forever.
Okay, I wanna read something that's was quoted about you, and I like your response.
Okay.
Carl D. McDowell is a smart, funny person that genuinely cares for people, and in this day and age of Hollywood, that is a breath of fresh air. He is going to continue on his path in Hollywood as he has been in a few movies as he's ripping up the stages in the comedy circuit. Now, how does that feel, having that written about
that's
you?
That's pretty cool. That's a mouthful. I don't know about it. I don't rip up stages anymore. I don't do comedy anymore. But I hope to continue success in acting, and to keep entertaining people.
Now, how did you stumble on to the Sons of Anarchy? How did that become the buzz in your ear, or so to say?
I got called in to audition for Luther, So Luther and Vandross. So I got called in to audition for Luther, and I go in, and Peter Weller was the director, and Kurt Sutter was there, and I did something. I don't remember what I did, but it was something that I should not have done, and they start laughing really hard, and they thought it was hilarious, and then they called me back after that audition and said, "Hey, we want you to play Vandross," and I was like, "Okay," and I had never seen the show before that, so I didn't even know what Sons of Anarchy was, and so I go and do the show, and then I watched that episode, and I was like, "Oh man, this is pretty good. I should go watch the rest." And then I watched the rest, and I was hooked.
Do you still follow the Sons of Anarchy? Still watch each season, or?
I am a fan. I have not watched season 5 yet. So this is one of my friends. I was supposed to watch it with him, and we never got around to watching it. I really want to watch it. I know a lot about it because I monitor the Facebook, and I see that all the spoilers on there, so I know what happens, but I've not seen it yet, and I'm excited to go and see it.
Now, what are you most comfortable with when you act? Like, is it drama? Is it action? Is it, you know, what are the roles that you predominantly enjoy playing, where maybe it's more like the real you versus a character?
If it's gonna be the real me, it would be something really complex and really dramatic, I think.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, I would really, whatever the role is, I would try to jump into it, and I would try to play it, whatever it is. So if you brought comedy my way, I would totally do it, and I seem to be funny to people.
Right.
If it's drama, I'd jump into that and try to make you cry or laugh or get upset or hate me, whatever it is, I'm going to jump into it. So I don't prefer it either way. I just, whatever that role is, I'm going to try to step into it 100%.
Now, do you find it hard being an actor, or is it easy?
Well, the acting part is easy. The getting the jobs part is really hard. I mean, you have to pretty much you go out and you audition, and you're told no, you can't act every day, pretty much. And then every once in a while, they'll say yes, you can act in this, and it's like it makes your life, you know. So I would say the hard part is just trying to get a job.
Now, I've asked a couple of other people who were sitting in your spot on the radio show over the past couple of weeks. Did you ride before the show? Is it something they had to teach you? Did you have any mishaps with motorcycles?
No, actually, I didn't have to ride on the show. So I ride every day. I ride a scooter, so it's just like a little motorcycle. I don't ride a motorcycle, though. I always wanted a motorcycle, but I never learned how to ride one. So I figured I'd go buy one and just go into a parking lot and wouldn't leave that parking lot until I knew how to ride the motorcycle, but it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah.
with that, Carl, most of the community colleges have a weekend program where you pay them, you ride their bike, and all you got to do Sunday when you're done is take the test and walk into the DMV Monday and get your picture put on your license that says you can ride a motorcycle. But
really?
Those classes, they don't pass you until they're comfortable that you know you can handle the bike.
Mm.
Now, is that coast to coast, though? Because I'm on the East Coast, and I've never heard of that. Something I might investigate.
There's a lady in Massachusetts, in Boston. Her name is Betsy Lester, and I will give you that information. You can call her, and she can hook you up with the guy that does the academy in Boston.
Boston is like quite the commute for me there, Phil.
No, but I mean, she might know somebody closer.
Yeah, because
might
I've
even
got
be
a
at
couple...
the university you're going to.
Well, that's
yeah,
what I'm
they
thinking.
Have them here in Illinois.
Now they have them from the very start, like how to start your motorcycle type deal, all the way through. through the safety avenues to the point of actually doing the little obstacle course, what I like to say, which if you pass that, then you're able to go get your license without having to go through the DMV bike maneuvers and stuff.
Yeah, because those look scary.
If you go through that program, it also insurance.
Correct.
Oh, because I did it.
We got to, hold on, ladies. We got 909. Did you want to talk to Carl or did you just want to listen? 909.
Just want to listen.
Okay.
Hello.
832, did you have any questions for Carl? 832?
Come on. Don't be shy.
You put your mortgage.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure. But I did learn
832?
The motorcycle class is that should be standard from coast to coast because it's a governing body that does that, that is outside of all the DMVs. So it would be nice to see a celebrity on the road sometime catch some moon therapy. I'm just saying.
I'll get on the road one day, I swear.
832, where are you located?
I'm out here in Houston, Texas.
Okay, so is this Javier?
Xavier, yeah.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry, Xavier.
No worries. Marcus is easier.
So, did you have any questions for Carl, or you just want to listen?
Right now I'm just listening. I know he's going to get to a point where I'm gonna have some questions, so I'll sit by here.
Okay, I'm going to mute you, and then I'll come back to you.
Right on.
Okay, thank you.
So, Carl, this is Gina from Oceanside.
Hello, Gina.
Which I got to say, I love your little bio deal that I ran across that talks about gang-ridden streets of Chicago. Because people ask me, where do you live? Oh, gang-ridden Oceanside. Because Blake Jr. Sayow did that in an interview.
Oh, really?
Just ran with it. I always laugh. So I like to see that, you know, other places refer to places like that too and stuff. But what I was going to ask you is, how did you get selected to do Sons?
Oh, it was just my managers and agents. I guess they called me in to go audition for it, and I went and auditioned for it.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Had you watched the show before you were on, even?
I did not watch it before I was on it. After doing the episode, and I watched the episode that I was on, then I got hooked.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the way I started watching Sons of Anarchy is I just ran across the show and I was like, oh, wow, this is cool. So I started backwards and came forward.
Yeah.
Plus the fact that a lot of people that are on that show are friends of mine and ours. And,
you have a hard time with that word, huh?
Yeah, I know. But, yeah, so one of my friends, Rusty, he's on this year. David LaBrava has been on since the beginning. And Emilio Rivera, he's also a friend of mine. Just almost all those guys, that we all hang out together somewhere along the road during this charity event or that charity event. But it's telling you, once you get yourself a motorcycle, and to me, I don't care if it's a Harley, a Suzuki, a Yamaha, or a Kawasaki, it doesn't matter. Even a scooter, as long as you ride, whatever you're comfortable riding, that's the whole concept, riding. Because there's nothing a full tank of gas won't cure.
Yeah, I'll ride every day.
There you go. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I ride every day. it is cool. Like, I do like getting out sometimes and just riding on like you go up the highway or something like that, go up the coast and look at things, and it's a fun ride.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. We took a ride up to L.A. for that boot campaign, so I'm going to be the leader today. I'm always the trailer, you know, type deal. So I'm leading this time around. We land through Hollywood. We get Hollywood, we get Beverly Hills, start riding down Beverly Hills, Sunset Boulevard area. All I could do is Pretty Woman, you know, but it was just a gorgeous ride. I mean, some things look good on the car and other things look way better on a bike, I think.
Mm-hmm. Marcus says he has a question now. Let me bring in Marcus.
Hey, yeah, this is Marcus from Houston again. I have a question, and I guess the reason for the question is because I do ride with a club here in Houston, Texas, and the guy that plays Jax was down here signing autographs, and my girl, of course, she wanted to go meet Jax, and there was a line probably 2 hours long out the door down here at the Lone Star Rally, and, well, they came by with the sign that says, no colors in the club, not meaning skin, meaning back patches, and so of course that probably dwindled the line down to about an hour. So my question would be, how is it, or how was it working with the staff of SOA, like you know, their personalities, and I mean, they're portraying people that obviously you aren't allowed to meet them, you know, and stuff like that. How was that? How were they as individuals?
As individuals, they were like a bunch of teenage kids. It was like, you could tell they were really close. Like, anytime there was a cut, they would wrestle with each other and, like, hit each other, joke around, pull pranks on each other. And, assistant director would have to tell them to stop all the time. Like, all right, guys, cut it out. Let's get this going. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, everything was just, it was just a bunch of fun. It was like a bunch of teenage boys just wrestling around, and then in between that, we shot some stuff.
Well, okay. When your manager gets you down here to the Lone Star Rally down here in Galveston, you know, if that ever happens, you know, make sure he says, yeah, y'all, you know, the guys with cuts can come in and get autographs and take pictures too, because that would be kind of awesome.
I will totally do that.
That's it for me.
Okay. Carl, is that like the experience, not like totally the experience, but is that the way it is with other films that you do, you know, the kidding around, or is everybody like, it just depends on, you know, what's being done at that time that, you know, is it people fun, loosen up or strict, or?
I think it depends on what it is being shot. Like, I shot a movie where a girl was like assaulted and killed in an hotel room. So obviously in between takes, you're not going to be joking around and wrestling. You're going to be kind of serious, trying to keep her in character, trying to keep her so she's not laughing. She can keep her cry going and all that kind of stuff. So some of them calls for you to be like, you know, serious. You got to be serious. You can't play around. You can't joke around. But if it's not a thing like that and it's just fun, everybody's trying to have as much fun as possible.
Yeah. Was it fun working alongside Adam Sandler?
It was.
Crazy shows out there. I just was curious if that's the way he really is.
That's the way he really is. Like, he did things that, like, you know, he's a superstar, and there's certain things that he doesn't have to do, like, but he would still do them. Like, he would go over to anybody, like, if you're the background, he would go over to you and inquire about your day. He was always funny, always wanted to make everybody laugh, and he's just a good dude all around. It was so much fun working with him.
How did you land the position of doing background work?
Background work is the easiest thing to do. Anybody can do background work.
Yeah, it's not hard to do background work. If you come to L.A., you go to Central Casting and sign up, you can be doing background work that day if you look, if you want. So, yeah, it's not hard to do. But if you if you want to be a serious actor, I wouldn't suggest background work, because the PAs and the people get to know you as a background artist, and they won't take you seriously as a real actor. So, I mean, it's a fun way to get to know sets and to get to know what goes on set. And it's a good learning process, but I wouldn't, and it's you can make money doing it too. So it'll get you complacent to where you'll just be a background artist if that's what you wanted. But I wanted more, so I had to stop doing it.
You know, I hear what you're saying, because I have quite a few friends that some do bad, some don't, just like doing the background work. Others want to be more serious about it. But in the beginning of the summer, I was out up north with a few of the guys, and Charlie was going to catch up to us, Jack, but he got pulled over. So we pulled over and we were waiting for him, and this cop was going to give him a speeding ticket. But while he was checking his license and everything, people were going by and stopping and taking pictures and stuff. So the guy came back and he asked him, he says, who are you? Are you somebody important? What are you doing? And Charlie told him, anarchy? He said, never heard of it. Sign here. So he gave him a ticket anyway.
Yeah,
he waited until the women were taking pictures of him from the cars, and then he gave him the ticket anyway.
That's funny. You would think Charlie wouldn't have to worry about things like that, but not everybody watches Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
Maybe and, that guy's a 50 Shades of Grey dude. He'll let him go.
Yeah, exactly. Nora, did you have any more questions?
Yes. And the role that you have portrayed in Sons of Anarchy, was there anything that came easy for you or that may have been a little bit more difficult for you to try and grasp at the character that you portrayed?
No, it was really easy. Being from Chicago and coming from a big family, and that family was the same thing, a big family, and so it was pretty easy to grasp that character. It wasn't nothing too major.
Okay.
But I think, you know, they was trying to bring those characters back with the mom, and she was supposed to be like this real badass. And Luther and Vandross, she had six more kids. I don't know what their names were, but so we never came back. But had we come back, it probably would have been a really good role.
Right. Were you hoping to come back, or were you just satisfied with what you did?
Well, I'm always hoping to work, always. So yeah, I wanted to come back, but I guess they wrote it in another direction.
But you are doing other things now, currently, correct? That's keeping you busy. That's, you know, getting.
Oh yeah,
there.
I'm always busy. I try to keep busy. But I'm always looking for some work. Right now, I'm the karaoke jockey for a live karaoke band, so that's keeping me pretty busy. We have rehearsals like 3 times a week, and I mean, they're getting pretty good too. So we'll probably be touring and going around doing karaoke parties. So that'll be pretty fun, along with the acting. So I'm staying pretty busy.
And you get back this way when you can, so you can visit your family and your friends, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just left that in August. So I was there in August. I'm pretty sure I'll be back soon. I don't know when, though.
So how come you don't do the comedy stuff anymore? Where you were...
You know what? It was I don't know if you know the L.A. comedy scene, but it's really political down here. And
right.
Because everybody's a comic and they just giving it away. It was you had to fight for time, stage time, and you get to a comedy club at 9 p.m. and you wouldn't go on until like 2 a.m. and be three people in the seats and it didn't seem worth it. So I was most of the time they would put names in front of, you know, comics. So like if I was a comic that nobody knew and Dave Chappelle walked in, Dave Chappelle would get as much time as he want. And whenever he got off the stage, we would get time. And I understand that totally. So I figured, mm-hmm. why not go and make myself a name? That way I won't have to wait for anybody.
Okay.
So
yeah,
I can see comedy in my future, but I'm just waiting it out right now.
Yeah, politics sometimes kills it every time.
Oh, yeah.
And then how did you end up going to Missouri? Was that the same year of university or that was a continuation school?
That was a continuation. I went, the first school I went to, football had shut down. So I had to go to another school to play football.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got in trouble at that school. So then I had to go to another school to play football, and that's where I finished up my career in Lincoln University.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
See.
Now, do you ever come back and talk with, or does your family still live in the same neighborhood that you grew up in?
Basically, I grew up on 35th and State, so right across from Comiskey Park.
Okay.
And then when they started tearing that place down, we moved over to 79 Carpenter. So she still lives over in that area, 79 Carpenter.
Now, have you come back and, talked with kids to kind of keep them away from the gangs, the violence?
I would love to do that, and maybe my manager and them should set something up about that. But yeah, I would love to go back to Chicago and talk to kids and tell them it's, you know, it's other ways around, other than gangs and violence and stuff like that.
Well, we know how high the violence is here, you know,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes, now they have baseball camps. You know, for kids. And it can be from any suburb, anywhere in the city, for the White Sox training center camp, stuff like that. And that gives the kids a week of a boost to be around the players. They get to learn, you know, baseball, everything like that. So for a week, they get to do something, you know, and think in a different direction. But, you know, maybe if someone like of your statue, you know, was able to sit down and maybe in a school and talk with kids, you know, that could put maybe risky kids in a positive thought and different track than where a lot of kids are, you know, facing today.
Yeah, I would totally be down for that. I'll get on my managers about that soon, because that should happen. I didn't think about that.
You know how the violence is here. You know, it's not great, and it's usually with kids, you know, which is the saddest thing. You know, and like I said, a lot of the neighborhoods, they don't have places for these ratchety kids to go, and so they hit the streets. Because they don't know, or, you know, if they can't go to a friend's house or something, you know, they don't know what else to do except hit the streets. And unfortunately, you know, it's not safe, you know. And like I said, maybe if they had something from, you know, maybe where... if you were able to do something like that, it could put a different.
Well, that, you might be able to
a negative.
You might be able to find your old teacher there too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I really need to thank her for what she did for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but see, that's the thing too. You know, going back and finding her, you know,
mm-hmm.
and thanking her, and seeing the direction that you're in today, compared to what you were when you were younger and the class clown, so to say. You know, but mm-hmm. that's not a bad thing. You know, I mean, everybody has their little niche. You know,
mm-hmm.
But like I said, I'm sure she would really enjoy that. I mean, I've seen teachers that gave me a positive back then, and I was able to thank them, because if it wasn't for them, not that I would have been a street kid, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But just their positive direction put me in a different place from where I could have gone, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We have
so.
We got a caller from Colorado. Ryan, are you there, Ryan?
Hey, I'm here.
How
you
doing, Ryan?
Hey, I'm good. I've got a couple questions. I'm sitting here going through your IMDb profile, checking out the movies and stuff you've been in.
Mm-hmm.
Did you kind of notice that, you know, once you got started and you started getting in more and more of these movies, that you had friends coming out of the woodwork that needed a hand up or... You know, thought that you could, that you had some pull. You know, I mean, that's something that, you know, you hear about that a lot of times. You have all these friends that you haven't talked to in years, and all of a sudden they're like, hey, he's, you know, you've been in a movie, so obviously you've made $1 million, so can you help me make my million and put me in a movie? Have you noticed any of that type of thing?
All the time, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually even had a guy called something McDowell. We had the same last name, and he found me on Facebook. And he was like, hey, we got to be related. And I was like, well, do you know this lady? And I was naming all my relatives. And he was like, no, I don't know them. And I was like, are you from Chicago? And he was like, no, I'm not from Chicago. And I was like, I don't think I even know you, man. So, but he thought we was family because we have the same last name.
Everybody in Chicago thinks I live in California, Carl. That I'm loaded.
Yeah.
They only knew the truth, huh?
Yeah, I don't know why people think that if you're out here, you're loaded. I mean, if you do a TV show, you're rich and you live in a man. No, that's not the way it goes. Absolutely not the way it goes. That's the way it's portrayed, but it's not the way it goes.
Right.
Oh, it is. You know, there was a band that came out to Colorado that, you know, I've got some pictures with them and was backstage talking with them and all this. And, they were pretty big and, you know, they had one of the number one songs, all this type of thing. They were working on their third or fourth album, I forget. And they had come out, all of them crammed into one van, pulling a U-Haul trailer with all their gear, and basically made enough money to get back to the house. And, you know, while they're out here, they've got all these opening bands talking to them, you know, hey, can you hook us up with this and that? And they're just laughing. And they're like, you know what, we're still eating Top Ramen, living in the same house, and pulling a U-Haul. So, you know, let us get there first, and then we'll help you out. But,
yeah.
It's just funny the perception that people have just because you're in Hollywood now that you're, you know, filthy rich,
well,
you know everybody.
I guess you know what? We're part of the problem by portraying, like, not saying that, you know what, I live in an apartment or something like that. I'm not rich. I don't have all this money that people think you have. I guess if you live a certain way and don't tell people that, you know, this is the way it is, they're gonna perceive it to be that way. So I think it's on us to start telling people, no, you're not rich just because you in this, or it don't work that way. And the more people know that, then the happier everybody will be, I think.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, now I've got a technical question for you.
Go for it.
All right. When you're getting ready for all these movies, like with Sons of Anarchy, you know, you probably did some research. You've learned about the different clubs, what they mean, the different initiations, these types of things. Is that something that you did with all of your movies as in-scene research? Or is that something that you started off kind of after the first couple movies, you started picking up and for that to kind of learn your role?
Actually, whenever I get an audition, I go and research everything I can. So, like, I'll go research the network it's on, I'll research the director and how they work, I research
the other actors and see who they are and how they are. And then you research the role. You research what that character is, what he does. Does he smoke? Is he left-handed? What's his demeanor? How does he get angry? How does he laugh? You research all these things, and you just put this character together. And that's just the way I do it, though. I don't know how other people jump into roles, but that's how I research things. And I research it till you can't research it no more.
Right. So tell me more about when you were assistant pimp. How does that work? What kind of research did you have to do there? You know, everybody knows what a pimp is, but I think that's the first time I've ever seen an assistant pimp.
An assistant pimp does whatever the pimp says. So he's pretty much a whore, but he doesn't have to put out. So he's just like, he's the pimp's yes man. So when the pimp makes the jokes, he laughs the hardest. And whenever the pimp says anything, whether it's great or whether it's horrible, he makes it seem like it's great. So he's just a yes man is what an assistant pimp is.
All right.
Yeah.
I just had to clear that up. I saw that when you were in Boston Up, and I just I had to ask. I hadn't seen that one, so.
I've seen an assistant pimp.
Yep.
That's hilarious.
What's your favorite role to play, Carl?
My favorite role to play? I actually like to be the bad guy, like the hated dude. I remember I watched a movie back in the day called Unlawful Entry with Ray Liotta. And Ray Liotta was a cop, and he loved this dude and his wife, but he liked the wife more. So he kept trying to hit on this guy's wife. And at one point, he broke into their house, and he, like, assaulted the wife and, like, made out with her and all this kind of stuff. And I hated Ray Liotta set. So any movie I saw Ray Liotta in after that, I would just, like, turn it off because I hated Ray Liotta. And then at one point, I was like, why do I hate this guy so much? He didn't really do this. It was this character in this one stupid movie. And that made me love Ray Liotta because he made me hate him so much. So I kind of want to put those feelings in people. I kind of want to, like, invoke feelings, or, like, I want to entertain them first and foremost. But if I can invoke crying feelings or hatred or love or whatever, I want to do it. And that's what Ray Liotta did for me. So.
And what was the favorite? What was your most favorite acting job that you had?
That I've had so far? I would say Longest Yard, because you got to work with everybody. Like, it was Nelly was there, Michael Irvin was there. You had like football stars, wrestling stars, rappers, comedians. It was just fun on set every day.
Okay. So, if you had the opportunity, let's go back to the motorcycles. I'm just gonna pick your brain here for a minute. You had the opportunity, which bike, and somebody told you can go down to whatever dealer you want and pick whatever bike you want, which one would you pick?
You know, I would probably pick a Harley because it seems comfortable. Like, I don't like, my scooter is kind of like a sports motorcycle kind of thing. So sometimes late at night I'm riding home and I'm, like, uncomfortable. But, like, those hogs, you can just sit down in them and you seem comfortable and you on the go. I think I would probably pick one of those.
Okay. Yeah, they're standing live by them for the last 40 years, but there's nothing like it. I mean, I don't know if you remember the actor Dennis Farina. He passed away this year.
Yeah, I remember him.
Well, you know, did you know he was a true life policeman in Chicago?
Yes, I did know that.
Did you know that the reason I ended up going in Marine Corps was because he was the one that arrested me?
Really?
Oh.
Yes, sir.
That's awesome. Did he know that?
Did he? No, he. Well, he found out afterwards, but I talked. I ran into him up in Hollywood, and I walked up and I shook his hand, and he was like, "I don't know what you're talking about." And I go, "Wait a minute." I go, "You were in the courtroom." I go, "You were in the courtroom. It was me, the district attorney, my lawyer, the judge, the Marine recruiter." The Marine recruiter, he goes, "No shit," because I got hair down to the middle of my back right now. I got out of the Marine Corps, and I just, for so long, I had to cut it once a week and follow by the rules. And the day I got out, I haven't cut it since. So it's been it's probably down to the top of my belt on my back, but I haven't cut it in 20 years. I just trim up the sides. But, yeah, when I talked to him, and then he remembered who I was, and when I said thank you, he was totally shocked. He said, of all the people I have ever arrested, nobody's come back and thanked me for arresting them.
Pretty odd, but that is pretty awesome at the same time.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just takes one thing to shake you up, man.
That's it. And I was sorry to hear that he died of a heart attack.
Yeah, it was sad. I liked him in pretty much everything he did.
Yeah. He and I don't know if you remember that show when it first came out about the 50s he was in.
Oh, I remember that. It was a wonderful series they had. I couldn't stop watching it. It was awesome. And it was based here in Chicago.
And Carl, you know who Dennis Farina played a cop. And you know who he was always trying to arrest?
Who?
Ray Liotta.
Wow. That's awesome. Is that a movie or a TV show?
It was a TV show.
You get a name it right off.
Chicago Story.
It was Crime Story.
Crime Story, thank you.
Yeah, if you Google Crime Story, you can get the skinny on that. But, yeah, they ended up, he did a movie with James Caan. It was called Thief. And Michael Mann was the director of that movie. And Michael Mann was the one that Ray Liotta, Dennis Farina, and a few other guys that were cops at the same time. Farina, most of his friends, and they all became actors.
Oh wow!
Yeah. Then
that's cool.
Yeah, but the movie was called Crime Story. But let me see if Marcus has any more questions for you.
Okay,
well, Marcus. Live. Did you
Carol, I would just, being in Hollywood and being a big actor, well, can I borrow $5 first of all? I just want to know the original. But, no, seriously, you did make a point, if people don't know exactly how you live, they already have a preconceived notion that you're on a $4.5 million home estate with, a security guard on your property and do everything, you know what I mean? So what do you do to entertain yourself? How do you let your hair down? How are you like me? Who is a security guard on a $4.5 million home estate?
Me. I'd be that security guard. To entertain myself, I play video games or I go out to concerts or I go to like Laker or Dodger game. So I guess that's probably not helping the point of not having a lot of money. But I think you do things like this, you get free tickets to things. So anytime I get free tickets to anything, I'm going. And I go to, theater shows. I go to the Laker games, the Dodger games, Clipper games. I go to concerts is my favorite, to go to see live music. I love to go and do that. So, I'm at the Hollywood Bowl at least once or twice a month.
What video game?
I'm sorry. I play most of the sports games, so like Madden or NBA.
Lineup, right on.
Baseball. I just started playing Grand Theft Auto 5, and that's taking up a lot of my time right now.
Oh, God. You, my daughter, and my son, I haven't gotten into the GTA series, but...
It's addictive.
I'm a first-person shooter, so that's where I spend my money and time.
Marcus said he'd have to put you on a Hayabusa. He says it's just as comfy. But I think for a first bike, I don't think we'd put him on a Hayabusa.
You know what, and I hear that often. The Hayabusa is my first sports bike. I grew up on cruisers. And I got the Hayabusa. I was determined to get my first sports bike. I was going to get a Gixxer 1000 and like this. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to be like these kids in the street stunning. Yeah, I'm way too old for that. and my now wife and I went and looked at this Hayabusa, and I instantly fell in love. And I've gotten on it doing 8-hour and 9-hour road trips and got off of it like let's go party after setting up my tent versus people that we picked up an hour away getting off, you know, like they're decrepit or something. It's the best all-around bike. You can go fast if you want to go fast, but you don't have to. And that said and done, one of my female friends, the very first bike she's ever picked up, and until recently she had been riding it probably for the last 7 years, that was her first bike, was the Hayabusa. So it all goes into, well, you know, I'm in my 40s, so I kind of have that touch with my mortality. So I don't do everything that the Hayabusa can do because I know she'll win if we get to an argument.
Yeah. I get you. But all right, well, look into that. If you can, like, throw these things on my page or like, on Facebook or send them in a message or something like that, because I'd love to give these things a look.
Right on. I'll go after I get back here to the desk. I'll look you up on Facebook.
Cool, thanks.
You know, that October 20th in Glendale, they're going to have the Love Ride. And everybody who's anybody will be at the Love Ride. If you can fit that in your schedule, I think you can. Think you should go to that. You can be at the dealer and schmooze, and then you can go to the Kistaic Lake and have the. They got the all day concert, one big party. If you never been to if you never been to it, it's pretty good.
I've never been. October 20th.
October 20th. It's a Sunday.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll do that. Put it in my message box, and I'll totally do it.
Yeah, no worries. I'll take care of you there. Because I'll be there in, unfortunately, October 20th. The 16th, I'm going back to Chicago because my niece gets married on that Friday, but I won't be back till the 22nd. But I'll message you, and I'll tell you who to talk to.
Okay. Yeah, I'm down for that.
And then, how do you get approached by your managers? Do they tell you what roles are coming up, or do you find something you want to do, or do you tell them I want to try that, or how does that work?
It works both ways. Sometimes I'll see things, or sometimes my friends will tell me, hey, I got this role that'll be perfect for you, and I'll be like, all right, I'll have to tell my manager, and they'll go through and hook it up. And sometimes they'll come to me and be like, hey, these guys want you for this, or hey, will you go audition for this? And I never turn down an audition, so yeah, I'm going in for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it works both ways. Sometimes they find things for me, sometimes I find things for myself.
And then I know you said you do a lot. You're addicted to video games and stuff, but how do you prepare for a role?
I prepare. I go. Depends on the role. Like let's say Vandross. I went in. I will watch an episode of Sons of Anarchy first, and then I would see who's who. I would go through and look them up, like Charlie Hunnam. I would go and look him up on IMDb, see all this stuff, read his profile, watch clips on him, just to see who he is as a person, as opposed to who he is as Jax. So like,
well, you know how he got discovered, right?
No, I didn't.
That movie was called Green Street Hooligans. It was set in
England.
Yeah,
I've seen that.
You know where the soccer teams are like gods, and these guys are their mob who take care of business.
Yeah.
According to Sutter, when he saw that, he said that was his Jax.
Oh, wow.
You kind of watch that movie and then watch the show, you'll see he walks and acts the exact same way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's awesome, man. I mean, and the dude, I mean, he's so cool. Like, I remember we hung out on set, and we was just sitting there talking, me, him, and my mother, my set mom. We was just sitting there talking, and we was talking about everything. And you forget he's Big Tough Jacks in the show. So
right.
We go back to shooting, and I'm thinking of him as Sweet Charlie and not Hardcore Jack.
Right. I was with him at the boot ride, and he happened to come riding in with his brother, and he got mobbed by a bunch of girls and stuff, and he looked and he said, "Hey, Phil, where's me brother? Find me brother." So I located his brother for him, and he had to get escorted out. But yeah, it's amazing just the way the crowds are.
But, yeah. Now it's things like that, like where you know you kind of excited that you're not on that level. You know, like I want to be able to go to a love ride and not be mobbed and not be able to do festivities or be able to go to Walmart, things like that without being mobbed. I like having that anonymity.
But if people approached you and said you're so and so.
Yeah, that happens a lot. It happens more when I'm. It happens a lot, but it's not weird. Like it's not like a crowd of people and not like hounding me. And I mean, I can do my thing and just say, "Oh, yeah, I'm that guy. How you doing?" And shake their hand and maybe sign an autograph or take a picture. But if you go to the movies and everybody like hounds you and you can't watch the movie and all that kind of thing. It's kind of scary.
It's I mean, I've been with these guys, and I've had people walk up to me and go, "Well, what part do you play on the show?" I go, "Yeah, I'm hanging out with the guys today."
You should give them, just tell them something, man. Just tell them something and live that life for a second. It's pretty fun though. Sometimes it's pretty fun. If it's just, you know, in moderation, you don't want to be hounded or you don't want, and not that I'm complaining. Like if people was to hound me, I'd probably love every minute of it.
Right.
I just wouldn't want it to mess up a good time or especially a good time for somebody else. Like if me and you hanging out and a bunch of people come over, I wouldn't want them to like mess up that time me and you having.
Yeah, I was in, I did a run to, I did a charity ride for an orphanage in Mexico. And my partner and I do that a lot. We have a lot of fun down in Mexico. But
yeah.
We were emceeing this event, and it, like four women come out of the crowd, and they were all like, "Oh, they're all over. Hey, I saw you. Hey, it's so good to meet you." And I'm like, "Well, it's good to meet you too, but I'm at a loss for words because I don't know where I know you from." "Well, no, I follow your blog. I listen to your radio show. This stuff," and it's like,
"Oh, wow."
So you get the, then there's also the other side of that coin is where you get the haters who are, "Well, why did she get to go up there? Why did she get to do that?" My partner will tell Bill will tell these guys, "Hey, if you want to go, he always extends an open invitation to whoever wants to go. This is what time he's leaving. If you're here, you can go on the ride with him. You can go up to wherever he's going. You can go in and have fun and do whatever they're going to do up there." But a lot of them, they just rather sit in the background and bitch about what you do and not what they could do if they get off their ass and want to do it.
Yeah, that's a lot of that going around. I have time for one more question.
Okay, Ryan, did you have the last question for Carl?
No, I think I'm good.
Nora?
No, I'm fine.
Marcus?
I was trying to look you up on Facebook, and there happens to be a couple of Carl McDowells. So I was wondering if you could provide your Facebook address.
I have no idea what it is. I have no idea what it is. It should be me playing football, or it's a guy standing up in an eye patch, I think. me standing up in an eye patch with a black jacket on, a black blazer, something like that.
Okay, wait a minute. Marcus, what? How can I find you on Facebook? And I'll send
you his link. Look for Turner Hill. Turner Hill, all one word. And I'm the only Marcus out of the 10 of us that will show up.
Turner Hill. I'm looking for Marcus.
I'll spell it in chat just to make sure.
Marcus.
And
are you on a bike?
No, he's actually eye patch holding a shotgun.
Yeah.
Oh, no, no, that's
okay.
That's
Carl.
That's my wife. That was our wedding picture. My wife riding side saddle for our wedding.
Okay,
yes,
so I did find you. Okay, wait, I'm going to send you a message, and I'll send you the link. Okay?
Cool, perfect. And as far as that question about the people sitting in the background talking smack, that's what we call them haters drinking on that hater raid. Get off that hater raid.
That's hilarious.
All right, Carl, I thank you for taking the time out of your day to do this. And,
thank you, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and you're welcome back anytime.
All right. And
thank you,
that's an open invitation to you guys as well. All right. Thank you.
All right. The I'll send you a message on who to go talk to at the Love Ride, so you should be okay.
Cool. All right.
Then,
thanks, guys.
You're welcome, Carl. Have a good night.
Thank you, Carl. Bye-bye.
Is Marcus still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Did you get my message?
Let me see. Looking now. It probably fell under other since messages. Other. There it is. Let me see. Nora?
It would be from Nora. Yes.
Yep.
That's me.
Got it. Awesome.
The Chicago people have to stick together.
I married a northerner. It's all right. She got to Texas as fast as she could.
It's okay. Understandable. But at least that way I was able to help you out.
Appreciate it very, very, very much.
Oh, no problem.
So, let me see now.
And
yeah,
also, if y'all ever make it out. If y'all ever make it out to Houston, like for the Lone Star Rally or the Rot Rally, please look me up. I would love to show you some of this Texas hospitality.
All right, I might take you up on that.
Yeah, y'all got a pretty awesome show. I'm a first-time listener, so gosh, it's been really nice. I enjoyed it.
That's okay. Please come back.
Yeah, we do. We actually do 3 nights a week. The other
okay.
2 nights are about bikers' rights. So if you got a well, Tuesday is usually a rant session. Everybody gets pissed off and gets to call and tell what they're pissed off about. Wednesday is the radio, and then Thursday is Bikers of America, Know Your Rights. But if you got a chance, you can look up, like I said, Bikers of America, it's all one word, slash Know Your Rights on Google, and you'll see it'll come up a white picture of me and another guy standing in front of a waterfall. And if you click on that link and go to the bottom of that page when it comes up and hit where it says the web version, that page will turn red and you can check out that page. But it's Bikers of America at blogspot.com.
Okay.
And then if you sign in and send me a message, I'll make sure you get notified of everything that's going on. I get a lot of people from all over the world. Like right now, we have... just to let you know, we got Brazil. We got some people in Brazil, France, Russia, the Ukraine, Australia, Canada, Italy. Got two guys listening in China. If they catch them, they'll kill them. Indonesia. We're pretty much around the world here. Anywhere anybody rides a motorcycle, they listen to the show.
That's cool. I'm in a city that has probably another famous biker show, Outlaw Days radio show. Don't know if you've heard of it, but it's cool when you hear a good biker show that's by real bikers, not, you know, just some celebrity wannabe, you know, biker type of thing. So, you know, listening to y'all rant and rave about riding in the beginning of the, when y'all first got online, I felt like I was sitting around a bunch of bikers getting ready to tell, you know, war stories of the road.
Right. I mean, just the page views today was 87,605. And since the first of this year on that blog I'm talking about, we've had 2,598,370 people look at that blog.
Just since
January of this year. So there's a lot of good stuff on there. There's a thing on there, I'll tell you, the 10 most notorious outlaw biker gangs or clubs, the Know Your Rights When Dealing with the Police, knife laws from state to state. There's all kinds of good stuff.
We have some organizations like that through the local COCs and the Defenders, stuff like that as well. So that'll be pretty awesome. Matter of fact, I'm gonna probably turn all some of this information into my club president because he's all on that type of stuff.
Because
he's gonna step down soon, and he wants to focus more on things like know your rights and everything else. So you might have picked up another fan.
I have a lot of following, and I have attorneys at my disposal for whatever. We've got bondsmen on call. we're with the southern part of California, and the COC for us is in Anaheim, over there by the Angel Stadium. So
yeah,
we're pretty locked in there, and most of the attorneys and this website is for bikers. It's basically for everybody, but the mainstream thing is we got bikers in politics. There's stuff on there about the Sons of Anarchy, began shooting. I know Kurt Sutter, Katie Segal, basically everybody from that show. I'm not tooting my horn here. I'm just telling you the true facts. We have, like, I just put an article up September 23rd, which... I don't know if you know that, if you heard this, but the federal court affirmed that it was okay to flip off police officers. It's constitutional to do so.
Freedom of speech, baby. Gotta love it.
Exactly. U.S. Federal Appeals Court ruled Thursday that giving a police officer the finger is done here by arrested activists. It is not grounds for pull you over. They can't pull you over for that. It was a 14-page...
Right.
It's a 14-page opinion that's on the blog that you can read, and it'll educate you. As well as you see, there's a bunch of pictures on the right-hand side, and it's a pretty good site. It's a pretty good website.
Right on. Well, I'll definitely check that out here. I'm sitting in the middle of a 12-hour shift, so I'll have plenty of time to read up on some of it.
There you go. But yeah, like I said, it's bikersofamerica.com/knowyourrights. You'll see an old gray-haired guy with a beard, and you'll see a guy wearing a black shirt. Looks like he's got an attitude, but that's me and my partner Bill.
Okay.
There's a bunch of links. If you click on the pictures and stuff, there's a bunch of links. They'll take you different places. And this site's website protected, so you won't get any of that.
I'll definitely do some OCD in on it tonight.
Yeah, and if you want to, my email address and my contact information is on there. If you want to send me your club information, we'll put you in the friends column.
Okay.
And then if you scroll all the way down on the right-hand side where it says block archive and everything turns red, if you click on any of those stories, you'll be able to, it'll pop up for you in the window. You'll be able to read about it. So... And if anybody else doesn't have any other questions or anything, and I think we'll call it a night. I'm gonna play a little Attica 7. Which one should I play?
This is by my friend.
No, you know what? I'm gonna play a Mike P instead. This guy here is he's an active club member in California. He's also a rapper. And this is one of his songs. It's called Summertime in the SFV. This is by Mike P. I thank everybody for tuning in. I'll let Mike take us out. And don't be a stranger. Come on back. Good night, everybody.
Thank you. Good night.
Yeah. Yeah. Mike P, the big homie. Summertime in the valley, homie. Yeah. Come on.
B-A-L-L-E-Y. We say G up and fly all the time. Yeah. Summertime in the SFV. Something for my 818 homie. B-A-L-L-E-Y. We say G up and fly all the time. Yeah. Summertime in the SFV. Something for my 818 homie. It's summertime in the valley, baby. It's summertime in the valley. It's summertime in the valley, baby. It's summertime in the valley. Twist the bottle open, homie, throw away the cap. Cause where we going, man, we don't need that. All we need is a 30 pack, a pack of Jimmy straps, pack of hood rats, and a pad to kick it at. I think I'll call Swim, see what's up with him. If I can throw some hoes in the pool again. When it comes to having fun, I'm a motherfucking addict. Once again, I'm back at it, baby mama, too dramatic. And goddamn it, it's about that time. Then drink up the vodka, beer, and wine. Not even Friday night drunk for the 10th time. So what the fuck? I guess I'll bust another rhyme. Cause hey, all I wanna do is drink beer and screw. Hang on the avenue and go home with you when the party ends. Mike P back again, representing. B-A-L-L-E-Y, we say G up and fly all the time. Yeah, summertime in the SFV. Something for my 818 home.
Goes out to everybody cruising Lower Canyon, homie, in 1999, 2000. Yeah, this one's for you, straight up.
In the town of 818 of the L.A. counties, there's a place that we roll in the San Fernando Valley. A little boulevard is called Lower Canyon, where all the chicken heads go when it's time for land. Hit the street looking clean, rolling D's up on a Cadillac. Open too short like a big motherfucking Mac. Take a sip of yak just to get right. Holla at some hoes at the next red light. From Fox Avenue all the way to Brand. Turn around and come back to the three-wheel stand. 64, watch it jump, hydraulics in the trunk.